InfoCast Theater presents An Evening with Richard and Oscar.
Oh, Richard, oh, good evening. How's the family and all that, then?
Why, hello, Oscar. Why, yes, it's a good evening, isn't it? Unfortunately, I have to tell you, we lost Mabel to dysentery, and Edward got the coughs, and Eric, Eric got bicycle face.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly.
And what of Annie?
Who? Oh, yes, Annie, she's fine, I suppose. I had to send her to the workhouse.
My God, I'm sure the burial costs alone were more burden than one man should bear. I couldn't imagine sending mine to the workhouse.
Oh, God. No, Oscar, I sold their bodies to university. Needed a new step and outwig. A newly single man must prowl, you know. And getting this wig wasn't cheap.
I suppose so.
And you know, the syphilis got every last hair on me head. Had to spruce up the old chrome dome a bit.
Well, yes, I had noticed you had a new bob there. It's lovely.
You like it? Yes, old Mabel finally made herself nice to look at, didn't she?
Sorry, I don't follow.
Well, it's her hair, of course. Don't you recognize it? Yep, no more horse hair for old Richard.
What is that horrid stench wafting from it? It reminds me of death.
Well, that's just the smell of the grave. To be honest, I can't seem to get rid of it.
Well, it's certainly large, isn't it?
Well, if I'm being honest, old Mabel didn't have much straw up in the old barn, so to speak. So, I had to put a little bit of Eddie and Eric in there too as well. I mean, you see how big this bastard is? Guess you could say it was a family effort.
In a horrible way, I suppose it's sort of a keepsake. Good Lord, is that a vulture?
Oh, yes. They tend to follow me now. Off with you damn birds.
Don't tell me, did Carl make that?
With every shilling. But don't get me started on the cleaning prices. Vulture droppings are, well, enormous.
Lonely Carl on the edge of town. I bet she gets a tug-tug jobby discount, eh?
Well, no. You'd think that. But I did get the first 5 wig boilings for free for the rest of Mabel.
Oh, what would Carl want with that, eh?
Who knows? Well, I must be going now. This syphilis isn't going to spread itself. And this is InfoCast 5000.
Hey, everybody, Baron Belly, regular size, and not in a toilet.
And this is Sam. Just Sam.
Hey, Sam. This is the
regular-sized Baron, who's going through puberty also. It's about time.
My voice has been craggy lately.
Yeah, well, it's about time.
Yeah. Finally getting my big boy hairs.
You getting hair down there?
A little bit.
Yeah, that's good.
It's sprouting. I think I might get a wig to really accentuate.
Yeah.
So,
Baron, what are we doing?
This is the podcast, where we dive into the history of things familiar to everybody. Join us, Pilgrim, as we try to figure out why everything exists.
And you're listening to a Dirty Bits.
Dirty Bits.
It's where all of the extra... No.
Doing a thing.
Stop it. This is where all of our extra info that didn't make it to the normal episode kind of flows over into this extra. You could think of it as a bonus. You could think of it as a relaxed fit. You could think of it as a nuisance. But we're here, and we're going to give you some fun facts. Well, all of mine aren't fun today. One's fun, and one is going to make everyone uncomfortable, but hopefully we learn something.
I don't have anything fun either. I thought you were going to be the fun guy this time.
Oh, I have a fun one at the top.
Okay.
Or you know what? I'll save the fun ones for when it gets too dark.
Save it. Yeah, no, just, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just bring it at like the tail end.
And right at the top, I know I've been corrected several times already. Episode 3.
What did we do?
Taxidermy. What? I said Achille, Carl Achille. It's Carl Akeley.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
fucking
gaff. I'm sorry.
Go to podcasting hell.
I don't listen to the pronunciation of every weird fucking name.
No, it's obvious we don't do any pronunciation work at all.
And it's not even weird foreign. It's just weird.
I think that's kind of our fun charm, though, is, you know, you don't know how we're going to say a word. So, like,
And you got to think, for all of the, like, ethnic names that we have butchered, the one I heard about was fucking Carl Akeley.
Now you should know better than to fuck with taxidermy enthusiasts, Sam. Right. Yeah, that's what you get.
Yeah.
That's what you get.
How dare I besmirch their hero.
But our facts were fucking correct.
On point.
Yeah. As far as we know. As far as what the internet tells
us. Don't tell us, though, if we did. It's all we got. We need this. We had mentioned in Wigs that in the Whig episode that they virtually fell out in the time between ancient Rome and the 17th century England. But this isn't totally true if we're talking about the world. That's really only concerning Western society. They were still pretty popular in Asia, although they never saw the day-to-day life boom that, you know, Westerners did, where, you know, everyone and their brother had one because it was tied to status. They had ceremonial and special wigs for different periods of life, particularly for each kind of, they came and went with different dynasties. They also have a through line.
You talking about China specifically, or Japan, or what?
China to Korea to Japan is how the fad travels.
Okay.
And through all these countries, they make, you know, a lot of appearances in theater because, you know, Kabuki theater and stuff was like huge.
Oh, yeah.
And wigs was a part of it. But, you know,
ooh, yeah.
I didn't bring that up in the main episode because I think like stage wigs was not terribly interesting. Like, we're talking about wigs in everyday life, not dress up, you know, because that would be more akin to like an episode on theater. So, particularly in the Tang Dynasty in China from about 600 to 900 CE. So that's 100 years after the fall of Rome, where supposedly we stopped seeing wigs in Western culture. They pick up in China.
It was the best orange drink of the Chinese dynasties, in my opinion.
Tang came from the Tang Dynasty. Yeah. That's very good.
Hey,
that's, we're bringing it today. Low-hanging
fruit.
Fucking
come on,
in.
Buddy.
At the time, long, rich black hair was a sign of good health, and wearing it down was a way of advertising you were single, because that was how you attracted your suitor. But once a girl married, propriety and pragmatism took precedence. Now that they were busy with family and household affairs, there was no need to parade your hair in front of strange men. Married women during the time in China wore their hair tied up in a variety of styles, ranging from the practical to the elaborate. This, again, through line through the red. I'm using that word a lot today, but we see consistently throughout different cultures around the world, it always coincides with status. The more elaborate, the higher in status you are.
You talking beehives? What are we talking here?
They were, I'd hate to put it this way, but they were kind of what you picture if you picture like a Japanese scroll of like a geisha. Like, it's tied up with like the loops.
Oh.
And there were a lot of buns, but they weren't beehives, no.
Okay.
No. That's just the best. That's visually, if I had to be pressed to it in a minute, that's your description. So depending on your social rank and contemporaneous fashions, the latter usually benefited from the incorporation of wigs. Outside of this small time period, there are plenty of other periods of examples of wigs in ancient Asian societies dating all the way back to the autumn period around 770 BC. So I led with the 600 to 900, just to clarify that they did continue after the fall of Rome, but they also began before our earliest uses of wigs in Rome. Obviously, Egypt preceded this, but wigs have always been around in China since about 700 BC.
People have been wearing other people's hair for a long time.
I didn't look up where the earliest ones were made from, but I imagine hair, because a lot of the Asian wigs are made of hair. There wasn't a lot of replacement wigs.
They have pandas over there, though.
Ooh,
you can wear a panda wig if you wanted to.
I think that's what Khabib wears. That MMA fighter? I think that's a panda.
The Russian guy?
Yeah.
There's so many ethnicities.
I don't think he's Russian either. I think he's...
He's fucking Russian.
He's something like that. Some Eastern European. One of those hard-ass countries where you drink vodka when you're five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And wear panda wigs.
Although I think he's straight edge.
Oh, yeah, he's Muslim. Yeah. He doesn't drink.
I think he's pretty, like, on level with the vices.
Trust
Except
us.
Except for beating the shit out of people. He loves doing that.
Oh, yeah. No, he retired already.
Did he?
Yeah.
I don't follow that stuff, but
yeah.
You know.
No, he's retired. Yeah. Trust us. We are MMA. We are
yep.
researchers.
Definitely. And that is definitely our demographic. We have so much Joe Rogan overflow, Baron, that if we didn't keep up with that stuff, we'd just plummet in the ratings. So outside of China, Korea and Japan also have a history with wigs that isn't too far from what wigs would become to represent later in the West. Korea began seeing an uptick in wig popularity starting around 900 AD, kind of where it's interesting, kind of where it starts to tank in China a little bit during the Korean dynasty. And by about the 16th century, you'll see that the, and I'm going to butcher this and someone can correct me, but the gashi start to make an appearance. It's a big wig fad that was also marriage-centric in the societal role to Koreans. A gashi, or dari, was a large wig and was originally worn by Korean women of high status, but interestingly enough, they were also exclusively worn by the kiseong.
Who are the kiseong?
They were like the Korean version of geishas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So these were all pretty much exclusively female. Like no,
there
no
wasn't
dudes
a lot of men wearing
wigs
in Asia.
Okay.
That I could see. Yeah. The kiseong, by the way, were also called genyeo. I think I got that one right. They were women from outcast families or slave families who were trained to be courtesans. Courtesans. So you know
the French
before doing
there.
This podcast, there's a lot of words I've never had to read out loud, and I knew what they meant contextually in my head when I read them in a book.
Yeah, they make sense.
But once you say them out loud, you just sound fucking stupid. Which
I think it could also be Cortesians.
Nah.
Anyway,
let's stick with the one. All right?
Okay.
And their role was to provide artistic entertainment and conversation for men of the upper class, and also to fuck them. But over decades, the fashion for the gashi became widespread and was adopted by women of all classes, eventually making its way down to the rungs of even lower classes. So the hair to create these imposing wigs was either purchased from Buddhist nuns, prisoners, or poor people.
I'm kind of curious. So as a Korean courtesan, mm-hmm. your normal hair wasn't enough. At this point, is that pretty much the only motive you have to wear the wig? Like you couldn't, there's no way that you could stylistically make your hair big enough to attract the male that you were trying to attract and get his money.
They kind of like it would be later in England. They were also embroidered with, you know, silk and other kind of ornate objects. And I think it's just easier to compose these as wigs rather than your own hair. You know, you could compose it and then you could take it off and then you don't have to do it again the next time you go out. It's just convenient. And I think
you have your hair slicked back.
And I think there's like a sex appeal thing too when you like know a little bit it's a wig or like it's a little over the top to be just hair.
Yeah.
It's sexy.
That's what I tell all the women that I date.
In what context? Do you tell them they should be wearing a wig?
No, I say like, yeah, no, the wig is sexy. Don't talk about the wig.
So you just go on a date focus with a normal woman that's not wearing a wig and you go, wigs are
no,
sexy.
No, I'm wearing the wig.
You're wearing the wig.
I'm the wig. I'm the wig.
Look at me. I'm the wig now. Back to the gashi. So the growth of these actually led to a shortage of the hair that they needed to create these enormous wigs. And so much so, the price of gashi became more than 10 times the price of a small house in 17th century Korea. And that's the only metric system I could find of like conversion rates and money and stuff is they were like the cost of a small house. You know, like there was no, I had no chance of finding currency for like to equate it to today's dollars. So you could buy a wig or you could buy a house, basically. There are even stories of poor families that had to save up for 6 or 7 years just to afford a bridal gashi. And yes, I did say bridal gashi. These ornate wigs took a bit of a lateral step from being ubiquitous with the ladies of the night to brides to be. And the bridal gashi soon became an essential element of a wedding But the soaring prices meant that many families could not afford to purchase the wig. And so, if you did go ahead and you got wed without a gachi, because you couldn't maybe, you couldn't afford to wait 6 or 7 years to get married, but you also couldn't afford a gachi, the bride could not move into the home of her husband and his family until the gachi was purchased. Eventually, in 1788, King Zhangzhou of
that, all of the pronunciation.
Joseon of Korea.
Yep.
Prohibited and banned the use of gachi because they were deemed contrary to the Confucian values of reserve and restraint. So Korea had its religious ban on wigs, just like Europeans would eventually. But interestingly enough, it was right as they were taking over Europe. So actually, I got that little flip-flop. Europe had their religious ban around 600 AD. They had their religious ban in 1788.
I'm kind of curious. I know this is a little step back from where you ended that sentence, but I am kind of curious as to what the sociological step there is from, okay, we have only courtesans are wearing these wigs.
But this was also the fun juxtaposition. The courtesans, which are geishas, and high class, like noblemen's women.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, oh no, you cannot get married without this fucking wig.
Well, the steps are there, and we did kind of muddle it up with talks of kibib and stuff. But so they were a status thing. They were exclusive. They were only for the highest class. And these courtesans or courtesans, maybe it is courtesan. These geishas, these escorts, only existed in the highest ranks, you know, of magistrates and, aristocrats.
Oh, they were high class.
They were high class.
High class ladies.
And they were expensive to make, so only like really high class geishas. I
had high class wigs.
I can't remember the name now of the Korean geishas. This is getting fucked up. But anyway, so it became more affordable and widespread, and it trickled down into the lower classes, but it probably remained this object of like reverence. So it probably showed your wealth and success, and that's something that you want to kind of advertise at a wedding, like the fusing of two families.
It was basically a wedding ring, kind of.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. It was like maybe a form of a dowry because these things had value. You know, so they don't cease to exist because the wedding's over. So you have this valuable object in the family now. Well, I have one more thing.
Okay.
There's a record of an incident where a heavy gashi wig led to the death of a 13-year-old bride. As the wig was so heavy, it compromised her neck as she was getting up to greet her father-in-law entering the room. It snapped her neck.
Jeez. I'm not laughing.
That's a real thing, too. That wasn't a sarcastic story. That wasn't hearsay. There's an actual record of that.
That's just completely, that's so ridiculous. I'm totally speechless by that situation.
It's pretty sad.
But didn't they test it out first? Like, did they give this shit?
I think she overcompensated. I think she really wanted to make a show of the day. She didn't want to let anyone down. You know, you're a 13-year-old bride. You got a lot riding on this. The pressure is absolutely on. You're a woman now.
Ooh, yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
No more childhood splendor. No more innocence. You have to start a family. You are the matriarch of this family with your, I don't know, are we going high or low here? 9-year-old bride husband?
Like, she wore a 50-pound wig. You know, you got to go higher. Well, escalate that.
Fucking May, last week, she wore a 60-pounder. I'm not going to have May. And she's six.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if a six-year-old can do it.
You can't handle a little 50-pounder? Carol?
But that's horrible, though. That's absolutely... I'm sorry. I'm sorry that she had... That happened to her.
Yeah, she appreciates that. Thanks. Yep. Do you have a story, Baron?
Yes. 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 Oh, I got a story for you. A story of political twists and turns.
Mm-hmm.
Some wigs were worn. Some wigs.
Some wigs were wigs. Wigs were worn. And wigs were wigs.
Some wigs were worn. Look, it distills down to, I really wanted to fucking talk about the Boshin War, which is this amazing landmark war of Japanese political development in terms of, like, this is where Tokyo came from. This is how the emperor takes power over all of Japan. But basically, what all of this distills down to is you have three clans.
Sounds like I need a beer. All right. I'm ready.
You do.
I'm ready.
You do. And make sure while you're drinking that beer to memorize the names of these clans, because we have the Tosa.
This will get easier as I get drunker, so yes. Let's do it.
We have the Tosa, We have the Satsuma, And we have the Choshu. And these were basically...
The Tosa?
Tosa.
The Shashuma.
Satsuma.
The Satsuma. And the Choshu.
Choshu.
You got two out of three in bed.
Yeah, think of them as Ninja Turtles.
Well, that would imply the existence of a Master Splinter.
There is a Master Splinter. The Master Splinter is the Emperor, I guess you could say. Who was 15 years old at the time that all this went down? He led a war at 15 years old.
Okay.
But so basically what ends up happening is these three clans align with the emperor. The shogun is ruling Japan over, you know, as the 1800s rolls around, The shogun is ruling over Japan. And what ends up happening is he's got all these feudal states that are ruled by other shogunate warlords, but there's also the emperor, who's basically a figurehead at this time. The other thing that ends up happening is that we have white dudes entering the scene, particularly America's Matthew Perry, who really wants Japan to trade with him.
Because trading is opening for the first time in Japan for a while?
You could say opening.
Because they were isolationist for a while.
Yeah, you could say opening. You could also say...
I'm getting the Last Samurai vibes here.
it's kind of... I haven't seen The Last Samurai, so I can't... I honestly can't...
I watched it in middle school, so I honestly couldn't tell you if it was a good movie or not. It had Samurai in the name and Tom Cruise. And I needed.
I think it was about the Boshin War, basically. Okay. It is what it distills down to. But
Don't remember a lot of wigs in that movie, but carry on.
Trade kind of starts opening because America is the first country to say, Japan, you're going to start trading with us, or we got better cannons than you do. You just got little samurai swords.
They don't have cannons at all.
They don't have cannons. So America is like, if you don't trade with us, we're going to start firing these cannons over on your shores. And so Japan is basically like, I guess you got us.
We're going to start our diplomatic process, which involves these long range swords that we're going to fire from the safety of our ships,
which is basically just Phil throwing swords from the deck of a ship.
This is a big ball sword that comes out of the launcher sword and goes into your face sword.
Well, that's sort of what happens.
That's sort of what happens.
Yeah, because Japan obviously eventually starts getting guns in the mix. But leading up to the Boshin War, the important things are you have the shogun, and the shogun is very isolationist and traditionalist. And the shogun does not want to trade with the Westerners.
He's very anti-gun.
Very anti-gun. And
guns down, swords up.
Yeah.
What?
And all this trade embargo, white dude political bullshit. This white dude bullshit.
Our whole podcast could be called white dude bullshit.
Pretty much.
Oh my God, I just realized that.
Except every episode starts with the ancient Egyptians, which aren't white dudes.
White dude bullshit featuring the Egyptians. Or ancient Egyptians featuring white dude bullshit. You want to spin it.
Basically, you have these three clans that I mentioned earlier that are very upset with the shogun. Choshu? I keep forgetting the last one. No, Tosa. Tosa and Satsuma.
I almost said it. I was going to say it, and then you took it away
from me. Sorry, you got it. These three clans are very upset with the Shogun for not dealing with the Westerners, because now the Westerners have all this trade power on Japan, and Japan's economy is tanking. There's earthquakes. Things are burning. Things are falling down. The Shogun, to try to retain order, puts up this police force. The Ronin, who reside in these three clans, are like, fuck that. And they
Godzilla shows up. He's like, it's Godzilla. Not even fucking worth my time, man. Fuck.
You guys are doing it to themselves. To yourself.
I came here for this.
You guys are doing it to yourself. What does this all have to do with Whigs, though?
I ask that.
That is the big question.
Yeah.
And I have asked myself that question so many times.
It's bad because it's your topic. And our topic is Whigs.
Many times.
So I hope you got a tie-in.
but basically, leading up to this war, these are what demarcated these three clans on the battlefield once they finally enter the war under the emperor's service to take over the mainland of Japan and eventually all of Japan. Mm-hmm. And so you have the Tosu. Mm-hmm. Tosa. Jesus Christ. So you have the Tosa.
The open-toed shoes.
The Tosa are decked out in red wigs. And they're called bear wigs.
Is there any reference to the animal bear? Or is it bear in Japanese, which
no, it's a
wouldn't
reference.
Be our bear?
No, it's a reference to the animal.
So it translates to bear.
Yeah. So I think they
didn't call it a bear wig. We call it a bear wig.
This is slightly speculation, but I think they're talking about they are encompassing, you know, the animal to...
Well, bears were like a big fucking problem in Japan.
Oh, yeah, I knew about that. So
they were like the animal to beat.
Yeah, and maybe it was kind of, you know, to correlate it to white dude.
White dude bullshit.
White dude bullshit. Maybe it's kind of like on par with the berserkers of Viking mythology in the sense that, like, you are incorporating this animal spirit within you by wearing
but
this
wig. But berserker's not an animal. Unless it is, and I just haven't known about this wild animal called a berserker, roaming the...
Yeah, we didn't get into it in our werewolf episode, but berserkers in Viking mythology were all about, like... I'm going to take a bunch of mushrooms. I'm going to be a fucking wolf
on the
battlefield.
I know what a berserker is, but I thought you were saying they were encompassing the spirit of a berserker, implying that it was an animal. Like there's some quadrupedal animal roaming around called a berserker.
Oh, no. I mean, horrifying.
Absolutely horrifying. An animal named a berserker. It has knives for hands. And it's just Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, it's a bunch of Hugh Jackmans.
It's roving gangs of Hugh Jackman.
So you have these three clans that are wearing these bear wigs. And,
were they
and
all red?
No, one was, Tosa was red. Uh-huh. Satsuma was white. Mm-hmm. And the Choshu was black. So basically they were these battle standards that you wore on your head that were inspired by Kabuki theater that had been going on since the 1500s or so. Hmm. Like I said, to incorporate the spirit of the animal as you go into battle to take on this maybe even slightly demonic entity, because a lot of, you know, Kabuki wigs were the depictions of spiritual entities that could be demonic.
Yeah. The weeaboo in me is that the right term? Weeaboo. Is remembering the butcher character from Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Yeah.
The spirit bound to the body armor of the two convicts in like that old prison. The one, the butcher guy, the one that's like comic relief, he has a white wig.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you could take this all back. And I wish we had spent more time on it. In hindsight, is what wigs meant to, what headdresses meant to different cultures at this time, because you also look at Native Americans and what, like, putting on the headdress meant you were taking on this spiritual deity.
They just wore whole fucking animals on their head.
They could be.
They were very, like,
but isn't
metal,
like,
metal about it, you know?
Isn't like an eagle feather headdress? Isn't that,
well,
a wig of some kind?
That's not a wig,
kind?
Though. I mean, now you're just stretching the definition of
wig. Is it
wig.
A hat?
I think it's a hat.
I think it's a hat. I don't know. Is it a wig or a hat?
Would a pelt be a hat, though? Technically, a wig's a hat. It's a hair hat.
Technically, a wig is a hat. Yeah. Okay, we're breaking
gears
it open.
To the philosophical. also, Was the Shogun fighting the Emperor, and was the Shogun in control of the clans? Or was the Emperor in control of the clans?
Well, the Emperor had these three clans on his side that I had mentioned. And then
they were all fighting the Shogun?
Yeah, the Shogun pretty much had the rest of Japan on his side. But what ended up happening is...
Who's the good guy? I get it.
I don't know. It depends on which Japanese person you ask, I suppose.
God, that feels like our country right now.
The Shogun initially, you know, during the course of this time, when he sees the three clans form this alliance together, he accepts a peace treaty saying that he will back down to avoid a civil war. So maybe that's a nice thing to do. Maybe that's an okay thing to do.
But one check in the pro column for nice guy.
But at the same time, he also used this as a political guise to put the emperor under house arrest.
One check in the bad guy column now. He's a complicated guy.
He's a complicated guy. Eventually, at the end of the day, what ends up happening is the emperor had been trading for more of these sweet-ass guns. Then
he just had the long swords, the really long swords,
the super gunpowder,
the automatic swords,
long swords.
Long range sniper swords.
He even had artillery. I was looking into a little bit about
explosive swords.
Not even explosives. They apparently artillery at this time in the it was the 1860s or so. Apparently artillery at this time was just, we're gonna launch a huge shell at your army.
They had explosives. They had ones that
I don't know if it exploded. Maybe.
Well, maybe not the ones that they had, but because 1860s, that's Civil War. We had like time delayed explosives.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They call back to our hand grenade episode.
Hand grenade episode. I think I just knew that because grenades.
There were explosives. I don't know if they figured out how to attach it to a gigantic gun shell.
They were crude as fuck.
Yeah.
They were dangerous too. A lot of people died because
a lot of wigs got blown off.
A lot.
The battlefield was littered with
many
wigs.
Just a lot of smoldering like black stains on the floor and a wig.
I don't know why. I think that's funny.
It's a great visual. I fucking nailed it.
And then
you picture Looney Tunes immediately.
So what? This is a huge war. In terms of Japanese political development. I hope we cover it more in detail in a later podcast. But
I'm positive it'll come up.
But, you know, we're talking about this is how Edo becomes Tokyo. This is how the emperor eventually takes over all of Japan from the Shogun.
My favorite part is when the emperor had to wear a wig with all three colors. Like a Rastafarian.
No, you're thinking of Tom Cruise. Again,
he came out on
David Letterman and
dressed up in samurai garb and tried to kill David Letterman with a sword.
That was some crazy times.
That was my favorite Tom Cruise. Samurai Tom Cruise?
While yelling about Scientology at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically how wigs relate to the Boshin War. However, is, and I know we covered it a little bit in the revolutionary time period, but, you know, this is another culture that was also using wigs to demarcate militarily. This is what clan you're from.
Sounded like more intimidation than anything. I think a long, flowy red wig and just...
Look at Google images of these wigs because they are, I hate to bring up the word again, they're super mullets. They are, and you know, to
try you're allowed one more mullet. Use it wisely. For the rest of this episode, you get one mullet.
These were amazing mullets. They were party.
That was where you used the mullet?
They were party everywhere. Party, not just in the back. They were party down your sides, party down in the front. Look up pictures of this. They are flowing down to your shoulders. If some guy's shooting a cannon at me, wearing one of these wigs.
No, I think it's more terrifying when he's running at you with a fucking sword.
Well, that's part of it too.
And you're like, I don't know if I should run or if I should crack a six pack with this guy.
I don't know how they kept it on their heads. That's the biggest thing. I want to know how they kept it on their heads.
The blood of their enemies?
Maybe. I don't know.
Sewed it on. Which actually brings me to my topic.
Oh yeah? What
I'm,
you got?
I'm going to steal the stage here.
Okay.
And that little bit of foreshadowing. We'll see if it, you know, when you can guess what this is about. But this is about something that is so prevalent in today's society, not to you or I, but to a large percentage of Western society that derived from wigs. And more importantly, kind of unfortunately derived from a very grim time in American history. So I started thinking about what I could share this week that was thinking about the group most affected by wigs throughout the various centuries that we had covered. You know, we talked about the Victorians during the Victorian era. We talked about Egyptians and Greeks. And throughout all of the stages of the wigs' existence, who was most affected by them? So that being said, I digress. We kind of stopped shy of the 20th century. And I was thinking, what demographic was most influenced by wigs in the last century? And what my research almost always ended up with was either Cher or black women, specifically in America.
I am excited to hear what you have to say about Cher.
I'm not talking about Cher. So in hopes to do this justice, I tried to get a better context for why the popularity arose in wigs. A lot of what I could find referenced the stigma that had been placed on natural black hair in America and an inner struggle and an identity crisis that a lot of women of color face or struggle with because of the standards we chose to represent as conventional beauty in popular culture here in the United States throughout the 20th century. And when it came to hair, that is, of course, fair, silky, straight hair became the colloquial standard of beauty. And the forced expectation of white society of beauty to only be seen in its own image led to the discrimination of black hair, which led to a necessity for simulation as well as self-loathing for a lot of these women's own natural hair throughout the century. Kind of why,
Jesus.
Know, yeah, it's not great. But, I didn't succinctly try to go out of my way to do a sad story or a fucked up story, but we're here. This is kind of where my research kept leading me to, and I didn't want to just say that and be done with it. So I kind of went a little farther back. So I hope you don't mind if I take 2 seconds to talk about the history as how we got here. And surprisingly, or not surprisingly rather, it goes back to slavery. So before slavery, an African woman's hair meant various things depending on where you were. Maintaining hair was both important and it was sacred because it was a nonverbal tool for communicating things like certain tribe affiliations, your age, your marital status. We see these things kind of in different permutations and cultures all across the country, the world in these earlier civilizations and, you know, even up until modern Western times, like these demarcated things. And not unlike what I was talking about in China either, in status and marital status and where you were in a hierarchy, it was important. But during slavery, hairstyles and maintenance changed because the identity of a black woman changed. For one thing, on most plantations, women were not allowed to wear anything but scarves. And in the southern states, scarves were actually a legal requirement for slave women because it distinguished them from free black women. I don't think that there was a version of that for men. I think it was just women. Another big change was the lack of access to proper hair care products of the day. And I know in like the context of slavery, the last thing you're thinking of is hair care because there's so many other atrocities attributed to it. But I mean, if you think about it, like personal care and like self-maintenance, to be deprived of just that in itself sounds terrible.
No, sure. Yeah. I think, you know, when you're talking about a situation where you're deprived of all of your humanity, you know, you're being owned by another person, but
you're not even being stripped of just your humanity, but also something that was so significant to who you were before this time.
And you would reach for something that, like, you know, you get to wash your hair. And that reminded you that you were still alive and that you were...
Well, I just thought of like how much I take for granted just brushing my teeth.
Yeah.
You know?
And yeah. Like, oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, you know, you just keep going up the chain of things we do to comfort ourselves for hygiene.
Crotch washing.
And thanks. So in Africa, you were surrounded by resources for your hair. Obviously, we all know, you know, black hair is different from white people hair. And so, you know, things like shea and palm oils were all over the place in Africa. And because there was nothing really like that for these women on these plantations. Many resorted to having to use toxic substances like kerosene, I read, to help maintain hair. And other things you had to resort to, like butter or animal fat. Very crude things that you had to makeshiftily kind of MacGyver into hair care products. You also have to remember they often didn't have the time required to maintain or wash or condition or twist your hair, especially if they worked from sunup to sundown. So for many, hair maintenance meant utilitarian braids or the aforementioned scarves, the resulting broken ends, damaged edges, and the plethora of stress to compound any damage from toxic chemicals. Black hair was considered that by that point unattractive during this shameful time in our history as a result of kind of the conditions that were forced upon it. It was shamed as a result by white society, and white society went out of its way to try and also brainwash black folk into being ashamed of their own hair, because now we're talking into like generational slavery, not just, you know, the people that came over during the transatlantic slave trade, but later on, you know.
Are you talking about like through media or through some kind of propaganda? I don't think it was through slave media.
No, I think it was just.
Well, what I don't know. I don't know what they got any other information from,
you know, popular culture. I don't know. I didn't.
Yeah.
Not popular culture. I'm sorry. Societal.
I guess trickled down through the plantation owners.
I didn't get into it. I don't know. But this started some of the earliest ideals of good hair versus bad hair, which is a dynamic that's still argued about today. Straight and fine hair was a white characteristic, and because whiteness was idealized, it was made the standard of beauty among black people as well. So actually, you know what? I didn't think of it, but I couldn't find enough substantive resources to back this up, but I read in some more subjective articles that there was a lot of tension between, you know, field slaves and house slaves, because this is the part that I couldn't find was, did slaves that worked in, you know, people that worked in the house, did they straighten their hair or was it required? Which seems like it would be, maybe perhaps, you know, kind of be forced as part of a uniform, which is actually going to foreshadow something that's going to happen later, you know, post the abolition. The abolishment of slavery. So that could be part of it, you know, that there's a status thing amongst even the people that were captive at this time is, you know, a status thing amongst themselves. You know, people that got to work closer with the slave owners than the people that had to work in the fields. After emancipation, kinky and braided hair was negatively associated with slavery. Kinky, unkempt hair was not only reminded black women of the terrors and abuses of bondage, but black hair in general disgusted and terrified white society, because at this point slavery is abolished, everyone's free, well, arguably free, you know, we're not going to get into all that, but so all of these, you know, old shitty racist white people that were used to having slaves, now they're not, but the hair was still like, it was different, it was other, it was scary.
Your hair is different than mine.
Still a problem in some parts of the country today, I'm sure. And this begins the history of hair relaxers, which we will absolutely be talking about in another episode, I'm sure. So I don't go off on a huge tangent. And this is because, you know, this came about because black innovators set to work to find a way for black women to avoid negative comparisons to white women. It was like that much of a problem that chemistry had to be brought into it. And I said I wouldn't go into it, but if you know anything about hair relaxers for like African American and black women, it's intense. It's a lot of work just to get your hair straight, and it's not pleasant. It takes hours and hours. They burn, and they destroy your hair. It, like, strips your hair of, like, a lot of proteins and stuff that keep it otherwise healthy. You're, like, killing your hair, I guess. And we took that long walk for a short glass of water to illustrate the deep-sewed conditioning white society had laid to stigmatize black hair. Now, this brings us to 1954, the beginning of desegregation. There became an even grander emphasis on assimilation at this time, with new work opportunities opening up to the black community. But now, there were actually certain hair requirements in a lot of states when a black woman had to integrate her job, and she had to comply with a hairstyle that her natural hair maybe couldn't do. So whether it was a flight attendant or a nurse or, you know, an accountant, secretary, it was part of the uniform to wear the wig. It justified the respectability of that person at that point. Could you imagine that? Like, part of your uniform had to be to wear that a hair that your hair couldn't do, like a costume. You had to put on a costume to go to your job because it was a requirement because your normal hair was unacceptable. And this is still a thing today. Like dreads are, and you know, white people have dreads too, but few and far between, comparatively. And there's like schools that like, I saw a bunch of articles. I don't know. I got indoctrinated hard on like the hair stigmatization culture that's still kind of prevalent in the 21st century.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of pervasive aspects to this culture still going on today that, you know, you could talk for hours and hours about. It's unfortunate that part of
it has staying power. It is not, you know, it's, and even within the black community, it's a problem. Like problem, not problem. People argue about it, and it's still like a stigma. Or, you know, in the 50s, there was a huge movement to wear your hair more naturally, which kind of contradicted this need to assimilate for these jobs. Like, it's a very nuanced topic that is surprisingly hard to research, which, you know, further frustrates some of the topics that we try to tackle, because whenever you want to talk about like white people bullshit, there's so much out there that's like
WPB.
What? But, you know, I want to find out about this, and it's like not as easy. It's not as accessible.
Yeah. And at the same time, you also nowadays, I'm sure you get into women are allowed to do with whatever they want with their hair. And is this something they enjoy now? Is this something that they like look?
I've been alluding to it, but I mean, you kind of jumped the shark there, but yeah, there's a huge infighting still of, you know, that it's oppressive to wear a wig. And then there's other people that are like, just wear a wig. Like if it makes you happy, it makes you happy. Some people like the ability to change up their look from day to day. It's a huge topic still. So back to the 1950s. We have the wig issue. We have the assimilation issue. But wigs, just like in previous eras, were pretty frequently cost prohibitive. This, among a couple other factors, ultimately led to something that's pretty big and extremely popular today and is kind of the topic of this whole conversation, but I wanted to cover some of that other historical content. In 1949, Christina Jenkins, a Leland College graduate with a degree in science, was working for a wig manufacturing company in Chicago. Her position was to develop better means of attaching wigs to scalps, and she began developing a technique to make the company's wigs sit more securely on the head. This graduated into examining different methods of sewing stitches or swatches of hair into women's existing natural hair. At the time, women were pinning weaves to their hair with grips and pins, which looked unnatural and bulky and were prone to slipping, so it was just pretty ineffective. A lot of people didn't do it. I mean, people did, but it wasn't like popular. It was kind of like a cheap alternative to wigs. Jenkins
should have tried glue.
You're not going to glue existing hair to your hair. You're just not hair smart. Jenkins' innovative new process involved three cords and a device called a weaving frame, which created a natural weft on which to attach the commercial hair and transform natural hair. Her invention was a game changer in terms of self-expression, and because Jenkins' pioneering hair technique now gave women, especially African-American women, the freedom to choose from a multitude of hairstyles without having to completely shave their head or cut their hair short to better accommodate their wig. Jenkins' next appearance in the records shows up on May 4th, 1951, filing patent number 2,621,663 for the permanently attaching commercial hair to live hair technique. Kind of a mouthful.
Rolls off the tongue.
She called that, but according to the registration documents, it also went by hair weave. Kind of a little catchier. I think that's the one that stuck. So from the cursory research, I only got the notion that wigs were huge amongst women of color, and it wasn't until diving into the details that I learned it's hard to place all this information with a narrative that's anything but complicated. On one hand, the proclivity for wearing hair that wasn't your own was catalyzed by one of the most horrid and despicable times in human history, and its legacy led to the popularity of wearing wigs to better assimilate for very specific reasons, but always ultimately because of the fabricated cultural bias for, quote, white beauty. But on the other hand, wigs and ultimately weaves became a huge tool for self-expression and a means by which women could have more control over their own image while still integrating their own hair. During research for this, I came across a lot of opinion pieces as to why women of color should or shouldn't embrace their hair, or why wigs are or aren't oppressive. And also, just got a lot of pieces saying, hey, do you, just do what makes you happy. But regardless of your takeaway, it's undeniable that the relevance of wigs and hair extensions play a huge role in the Black community throughout the 20th century up until today. And just to punctuate that statement with one statistic I was able to find, I found a study that collected data from 2015 that showed approximately 44% of Black women in America rock weaves on a regular basis.
Which is weird because the first take of Cardi B's Cardi B's song "Wet Ass Pussy" was actually "Wet Ass Weave," but they decided to.
You had a long time to cook that one up, and that's
that's what I got.
But Wah doesn't have the same
doesn't have the same cultural impact, you know? Doesn't have the same shock factor.
And then they tried to do "Wet Ass Pussy Weave" and then have the WB silent.
Oh my god.
But nobody caught on.
There's a lot of sagging underpants in my imagination right now.
How do you feel about me one-upping your Nicki Minaj joke? Cardi B joke. Well, I never got to share my super funny fact for when things got too depressing.
I don't know what's funnier than a pussy weave, but...
Well, you're okay. Right. It's going to be hard to top that. But it was just that the term bigwig simply came from when people could afford giant wigs.
What do you mean a giant wig? Like an afro?
On the zenith of the French Revolution, when people were spending exorbitant amount of money on wigs, like some people were saying like 600 to 800 francs a week on wigs, they would be called big wigs. And that's where we got the term big wig.
So it's just...
That's it.
Giant curls.
Well, I mean, we covered this extensively in the last episode.
Okay.
But yeah, big... Giant wigs, like excessively large wigs,
but not enough to
like they'd need an extra airplane seat wig.
Listen, Sam, before we close the episode, you promised us a Locks of Love story. Let's hear the dirty of that. It happened last episode. So let's go.
Yeah. So I couldn't find any good, like nothing that I was satisfied with as far as research for Locks of Love, because I wanted to accompany this story with some factoids about it. I know that it's a huge enterprise and I know it's a huge, and also if you have long hair and you didn't know this and you're looking to chop it off, donate it's a donation service. It's a charitable organization where you donate your human hair and they'll make wigs for, you know, people that have ailments that result in alopecia, like cancer, you know, the chemotherapy. Less syphilis these days, turns out. More cancer than syphilis. But I tried to do this. I have long hair, for anyone that's seen the Instagram or Baron's art.
Long, luxurious hair.
It has to be like a minimum of 6 or 8 inches or something. And so I found it out. So then I had to, and it wasn't quite long enough, so I had to wait a little longer, and I got like fussy about how long I actually wanted to keep my hair or whatever. It turned into this whole thing. And then I asked my wonderful girlfriend Geneva if she would chop my hair off. She's never, I guess, cut hair in her life, and I had a terrible bob haircut. Like
with a meat cleaver.
It was with like scissors that you cut paper with. So it kind of hurt a little bit. And she did it from a ponytail. And I don't know if you know how that works, anyone out there that's cut hair before, but it makes it long on the... I had a Karen haircut for a while. You probably didn't know that because I kept it in like a bun for a while. But I had it like really long on the sides and short in the back. Because if you think about it, disproportionately, if you do it from a ponytail, you're disproportionately pulling your hair on your scalp from different places. So it's all different lengths. When you go to a barber or a salon, they don't put your hair in a ponytail and cut it and say, done. It turns out. So that's what Geneva did. My hair was... Karen mode for a while, but regardless, I had this bag of hair now. I'm not a lazy person, but when it comes to parcels and mail, I will sit on those packages. I have a package for my sister that I've been sitting on for 2 months. That hair is somewhere. I've moved twice since I've cut that hair off. And I still have it. It's somewhere like in our kitchen in a baggie. I never sent the hair.
Why?
But now I don't know where it is, but I know it's in the house. I know I moved with it with the intention of, oh, I found it. And I'm like, oh, I got to send this. Like, it's never like, I'm not going to send that. It's like, I see it and I'm like, oh, I got to get that to the post office. And then I don't. But I know I saw it when I was moving and I was like, I got to keep track of that. And I think it's in the kitchen.
So some guy has it attached to one of those propeller hats that they give, like,
and
you
it's
know,
just twirling
like,
a, yeah, just a ponytail around in a loop. I wish. Unfortunately, it hasn't left the confines of my row home. Not yet. It's we not spinning from somebody's hat yet.
Sam, this is Nicolas Cage. We have to find the hair. It's the national treasure.
This is national treasure, like, 6.
We have to save the hair. Sam.
That's a good Nicolas Cage impression. All right. I checked out your website.
Yeah,
it's really good. It's really good. I finally checked our website. I finally checked out our website.
Yeah, I have to post some transcripts on there.
I was looking. I like that you post the transcripts. It's fun to read through old transcripts.
People
I gotta
love
say,
that shit.
I'm
you
gonna
love
call,
that shit.
I'm gonna call you out. The link to the merch doesn't work. You gotta fix that.
We'll try it. I disagree with you.
It's not a disagreement.
You're
you can't
wrong.
Disagree
you're,
with it. It
no,
doesn't.
You're wrong.
I tried to go and it said not found.
I don't. You know what? That was coded by me personally. Sam.
You can't.
So,
that's no.
Me,
you,
Nicolas
you can't
Cage.
Fake news that. It just doesn't work.
If you follow the link, that's where you can find
the hair.
The missing hair.
Also, I'm on Instagram. Infocast 5000, just written exactly the same as the podcast that you just listened to.
Boom, boom, boom. And the website is wordpress.infocast5000.com.
Not infocast.com. If you go there, they'll tell you to go to the one with WordPress first.
Yeah.
Google does a good job of correcting it because I know on the last episode, or it might be 2 episodes ago, I erroneously said it was Instagram. Or infocast5000.com and you corrected me, whatever. I still forgot. And I still typed in the wrong infocast. I didn't do the WordPress, but it still got me there.
If you are an internet refugee, go to WordPress on infocast5000.com and we will take you within our borders. We will cradle you in our wig-like tendrils of warm fingers and hug you and show you the proper link to our merch.
I hated all merch. Of that. I hated all of that, and I'm going to say goodbye.
Wait, I've got one more thing.
Oh my
one
god!
One more quick
okay.
thing.
All right.
Hey, look. We need to get our name out there a little bit. So if you've got a couple seconds, just put in a good review on the iTunes. That would be amazing. And tell a friend about us, and we love you, and we'll see you on the next, we'll see you in the next week, where we are going to a new fucking topic, baby. Bye.
Bye.